All right, welcome back to Lions Collective. We're live usually on Wednesdays, but today we made an exception because Brad Holmes spoke to the media today, and I have three guys that were in the building speaking to Brad Holmes, so we'll go over that. A lot of what Brad had to say, there's plenty to talk about. We'll get to the offensive coordinator stuff later in the show as well. Mike McDaniel, apparently there's some interest there, but we'll just start with the biggest topic for Lions fans, and that is Brad Holmes finally speaking today, addressing what he what people wanted to hear. And I thought, you know, you guys did a great job asking all the right questions. I'll just start by just some of your takeaways. We'll kind of get into the accountability part because I think that's what people were hoping to see today. I mean, Dan gave himself an F. That was his accountability. And then now it was Brad Holmes' turn today. So we'll start there. Brad Holmes and the accountability part of it. You guys being there, were you guys satisfied with that aspect of the Brad Holmes press conference today?
I think Dan Campbell gave himself a freaking F. So that's like an F minus. Like it's a yeah. serious F. And Holmes was a little bit more muted. It was a pass fail grade. Didn't make the playoffs. Fail. I don't know. I understand why fans wanted to hear accountability. In particular, given that there was a bit of chest thumping as, you know, this team climbed out of the cellar into contendership. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you're satisfied with it, if it makes anything better to hear an admission of coming up short. I think the lack of details maybe left me unsatisfied. You know, why did you feel you came up short? What do you need to do to correct those shortcomings? You know, as much as we pressed on God knows how many different topics in 40 minutes, I felt like we didn't get a lot of satisfactory answers in that regard.
Yeah, I'm with you, Justin. I think that's where my mind goes. You know, a couple years ago when, Brad pulled out every single receipt known to man. One thing he said during that rant was, I'm big on accountability. And I think you all would expect me to be accountable when I'm up here. And when things don't go right, you would expect me to be accountable. So that's something he said, I think, about 2 years ago now. And they just had a season where things didn't go the way they wanted. This is the first time that success was not linear in the 5 years that they've been here. And so I was kind of curious what he would say. And to me, it was sort of empty calories a little bit. I would have liked to see him go into more in-depth, go into more detail about what didn't work. And he was asked some of those questions point blank and direct and kind of dodged them. You know, I think there are some things he could point to, whether it's the offensive line. And, you know, he says it's a priority for us. We're going to be urgent with us. But you need to see that now. You know, it could have been urgent a couple years ago. And or even last year when Frank Ragnow was openly contemplating retirement and the team knew, Brad said today that those breadcrumbs were there, but Frank didn't ultimately tell them until end of May. So I think you can plan for things like that. And so when I look at this offseason and kind of what it was a lot of Brad Holmes telling us, you know, even though those words were good, weren't him directly. That's kind of the MO of this, you know, organization last offseason where we're 15-2. Like, why should we have to rock the boat too much? And I understand that. I think you get 1 year of that, though. 1 year of saying we trust our guys. We just came off this incredible season. We're a little injured. Let's run it back with the guys we have. And they did that. And it led to a 9-8 season, a fourth place finish. So I think I was looking for a little bit more of that accountability that Brad said was going to be there. And he said that word. I just didn't really hear it or see it explained in other ways.
Hey, Will, you're muted there, pal. This technology stuff is crazy.
Yeah, okay, well, while
he figures it out, let me just go to the offensive line, right? Like, Holmes points out, we've been investing in the offensive line, and he labels off all the draft picks, right? Or he highlights the years. And so we know what they've invested. We know that they've drafted Penei Sewell. We know that they've drafted Christian Mahogany and Colby Sorsdahl and Tate Ratledge and Miles Frazier. And some of those have worked out and some of them have and haven't. And, you know, some are to be determined, but I think you can also say like we've taken some stabs and we haven't done enough. Like, those two things are both possible, right? Like, they've added some really good pieces. Penei Sewell, obviously, even if it was a no-brainer, is a foundational core piece for the rest of his career, hopefully, right? Tate Ratledge looks like he's going to be really good. Mahogany, even though he was kind of disappointing this year, remains good value for a sixth-round pick. Sorsdahl has been and, you know, probably will remain a bust, if you can even call a fifth-round pick a bust. But, I don't think they did enough on the veteran front. They temporarily patched it with Kevin Zeitler for a year. That was a really good move, but you needed another move of that caliber this year, and they didn't. And that was a big part of the reason why they went backwards the way they did.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah. Gotcha.
It's amazing what 2 weeks off does to a kid. Can't even figure out how to turn his mic on all of a sudden. I thought Brad spoke a lot and said little, which obviously stood in pretty stark contrast to the end of 2023 when he spoke a lot and said a lot and cashed all those receipts. I was a little bit disappointed in the lack of specifics that he was able to offer, and I get it. They haven't gone through their full deep dive yet, and it's hard to project exactly what the NFL landscape is going to look like with potentially available players. But even looking inward, I thought he could have given us some more details and exactly how they aired this season. And look, he said right off the top, he's always going to look at himself first, and then said he's already started to, and these are his words, identify some things that I can definitely do better. And maybe 10 minutes later, I followed up and just asked if he could share one or two of those things that he feels like he could do better. And he dodged it behind the guise of it would be a strategic disadvantage to divulge that. I found that to be a little bit soft, to be honest. I think you could offer even a general answer as to whether it pertains to the free agency process, the draft process, the trade conversations, the depth, the general roster construction, without giving away exactly what they have seized on. So that among other answers just left me a little bit unfulfilled, I guess, over the course of a 45-minute press conference.
You know, there was a theme in this, right? And something he kind of repeated often, like, we've tried to make these moves and they didn't happen. Every team tries to make moves that they didn't happen. Like, that's, you're not special because your trade in the draft didn't work out. You weren't able to get your target. Like, part of being a GM is having plans A, B, C, D, right? And you've got to be able to be flexible and maneuvering. And, you know, Holmes knows this. He's been flexible and maneuvered and done some really great things over his tenure. And, this offseason and maybe last offseason, there just wasn't enough of landing that impact to get them to where they need to be. But I'm with you, Will. Like, I think fans would have been far more receptive if he would have come in and just given some broad generalities of like, hey, this is a specific area where I came up short. Not that we didn't make the playoffs, so I failed. Like, that's yeah. So broad that it says absolutely nothing. Like, say I didn't like something I did in the draft, or say I maybe we weren't a little bit aggressive enough to get a veteran offensive line. Say anything that says you recognize a specific mistake that, whether media or fans have been frustrated about. I think that's going to go a lot longer or a lot further with the fan base that's pretty frustrated right now.
Yeah, I didn't understand the whole, like, if I can't get into that, it's going to be a competitive disadvantage. I really didn't understand that. There are things that you can say that would appease a lot of people out there that 100%. Want to see you take that accountability that you say you're taking while still providing some specifics. We're not asking who you're taking 17th overall. We're asking, what ways you think you can improve. And, he's talked about things like that in the past, so I don't know why he wasn't willing to go there today. That was a little soft, if I'm being honest. I agree with you, Will, in that sense.
Yeah, I'm not even saying this is the case, but it gives the impression when you entirely dodge the question that you actually haven't looked inward yet and you actually haven't identified any areas where you can improve. I'm sure he has in both cases, but to completely dodge it suggests that you don't have an answer to share. And that's just not a great look coming off of a 9-8 season. And then, look, I think he was pressed. I wouldn't even say pressed. That's probably too aggressive a term. I think he was asked fairly about a number of holes that are possibly on this roster for next season. Justin, you asked about the center position. Mm-hmm. I know I asked about the safety position. I know Tim asked specifically about Frank, I believe. And it just felt like in every case, talking about the roster, he was unwilling to commit to even making aggressive moves. And I think that also would have appeased the fan base in a big way if he had acknowledged that center looks like a major hole now. And I understand they have one under contract, but Graham did not play well this year. And Graham, to me, is pretty clearly ready to step away, and the Lions are pretty clearly ready to move on from him. If he had just acknowledged that and allowed for the possibility of the Lions making a front foot move at center this offseason, people would have really appreciated that. If he had acknowledged that they're in a dicey situation now with Kirby and potentially Brian Branch, and that, yes, they do need to potentially attack safety, not just because it's a position, but because it's one that might be a position of deficit next year. Again, I think people would have appreciated that on the outside.
And correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but like I'm sympathetic to a coach during the season when he's asked these big picture questions and he says, I can't even think about that right now. I've got a game plan for the next opponent. You know, I can't think about the big picture stuff because, like, it's just tough. Your week is so consumed. Like, I'm not saying that Brad's week isn't consumed with all kinds of things, but I feel like his job naturally lends itself to always being in a position to be thinking big picture, right? Like, everything you do is thinking big picture in roster construction. So, like, while they might not have gotten fully into their deep dive here 4 or 5 days after the season, like, I still feel like he has a better grasp on what he feels about the overall status of his roster than, you know, he let on today. It felt like just saying we're in the infancy of things was an excuse not to go into the depth.
And to that point, Justin, like, even Dan, who just finished the season and, you know, was game planning for the Bears, like, not too long ago, even he had some kind of big picture thoughts on what needs to change. And he didn't reveal all of those, but one thing he did say was, you know, I'm not saying we weren't hungry, but let's get that hunger back. And he talked about needing more competition in a lot of areas because that brings out the best in players. That's a very specific thing to say. Yeah. And like, he said that on his own, kind of unprompted. Mm-hmm. And so if he can offer that up right after he just finished coaching the season, I don't see why Brad can't after he's been, you know, trying to rework this roster all season behind the scenes and thinking how he can improve it. Like, that's his job to think big picture, as you said, Justin. So if Dan can come out and give us specifics, I don't see why Brad can't. And I didn't get a lot of that from him today.
I'll give Brad credit for this. He painted a pretty clear picture on David Montgomery. It sure sounds like David Montgomery has played his last game with the Lions. I suppose that could change this offseason, but Brad, during that answer, even began talking about him in the past tense a little bit and appreciated him for everything he has done for the org, and then kind of backtracking and leaving open the door for a return. But I think both David Montgomery and the Lions know that he is at the end of his time here. And Justin, I feel like this is a conversation that we've had for maybe 2 months now. And I want to give you credit here, because at some point in maybe even early November, you turned to me and just said, off the top of your head, do you think David Montgomery is here next year? And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, of course. They just signed him to the extension. He's only 1 year into it. And you said, I don't know. And the more that I thought about it and the more we watched the season, the more we came to the conclusion that he's probably not. And for one, it would just be bad asset management to bring him back if he's going to continue to play the role that he played this year. Like, you are no longer using David Montgomery the way that you paid him. And that's a problem. And to be honest, that reflects poorly on Brad. And look, you paid David Montgomery like a clear RB1B or 1A to Jahmyr Gibbs's 1, and he was used this year like a clear RB2. I mean, he was the 12th highest paid running back in the NFL, and he finished 31st in both carries and touches. And you just can't in good conscience bring him back with a $8.5 million cap hit next season and 10.2 the year after that with the same role. And I think that the Lions have come to that conclusion. And I think David, to his credit and to his ultimate defense, has come to the conclusion that I want to be somewhere where I'm going to get the ball, because he still deserves it.
It's going to be interesting because I don't blame Brad for signing Montgomery to a contract extension. I didn't have a problem with it then. I don't have a problem with it now. I think the problem was how the offensive game plan from a coaching perspective developed around the running back position and how little forethought they gave into how they adjusted the rotation with him and Gibbs. I understand why you want more of Gibbs. I understand why Gibbs becomes the de facto starter. He's the more explosive player, but the balance was just off from the start, and they could never find or rediscover the balance they had before. And those two are so valuable to each other in terms of how they lighten the workload, keep the legs fresh. It's what's made that tandem so impactful the previous two seasons. And it needed to be tweaked, I think, to satisfy what you were going for. And they really end up flipping it on its head and weren't able to recover. And so I know Holmes's comments today made it sound like Montgomery's gone, but he did say, I do hope that he's here and that it could work out here. And I think that they have time, obviously, until the new league year to kind of make that decision on whether, you know, it's a trade or a release. But whoever the next coordinator comes in might offer a pretty compelling pitch on how to get this thing right. And so I'm not going to, you know, completely close the door, although it felt, you know, Brad opened it a little bit more on his end today.
Yeah, I guess what I would just say in response, Justin, is that, like, I also supported the move when they made it. In all honesty, it probably functions more as a 2-year deal than a 3-year deal with that out after next season. What Brad failed to do, in my opinion, is to put an infrastructure in place to maximize the return on that value and that deal. And that's when it ends up backfiring. And it clearly did this season. And part of that also falls on Dan for failing to hire a coordinator who could maximize those two weapons in the backfield. But they made the move. The move made sense then. And then 12 months later, between a crumbling offensive line and an O coordinator who got stripped of play calling duties, the move kind of blew up on them. And both Brad and Dan deserve some level of blame for that. But I agree. I mean, if they can salvage the offensive line this offseason on the interior and hire a sharper play calling OC, maybe you can salvage the investment. I just wonder if David wants to be here.
Yeah, for sure. I do feel like if you're going to bring him back, there needs to be some smoothing over. You know, Demo's been posting sort of these cryptic messages on social media, not exactly trying to hide it. You don't want to read too much into that, but, you know, sometimes you can. And I think with him doing it as much as he has, he probably feels some type of way. And when Dan was asked about this throughout the season, he's like, oh, you know, Demo's such a trooper. You know, he's, just a professional in the way he handles things. Yeah, you can only say that like one time before it falls on deaf ears, you know. I really think that they need to smooth this over if they're going to keep him. And you're right, Justin, Brad didn't completely close the door. It wasn't entirely right after they drafted Jahmyr Gibbs. You asked about DeAndre Swift. And he's like, you know, he's still in the roster for now. We'll see. Yeah, and then he's gone the next day. It wasn't quite that. But
no.
I mean, based on where this thing's heading, I do wonder if they move on from him. I think he might only have like 1.75 in guarantees next year or something like that. So I do wonder where that goes. But it's tough because if you lose a player like that, you're just creating a hole. And you have to find another player. And you can add that to the list, a growing list of these needs where you don't even have all the capital to address all these because you're trading them away like it's nothing. So it really speaks to the larger issue here, which is they've kind of gotten away from what worked for them early on. And, you know, to get to this point so quickly with Demo, it feels weird, but they had chances to adjust how they're playing him and give him those touches that he wants and work him into the game plan with an offense that needs to stay on schedule a lot of the times. And I think you could do that by running downhill with a guy like Demo, even behind a rough offensive line. I think that's what makes him so valuable is the fact that he can find those tough yards in between the tackles. And there are times where Jahmyr Gibbs would even, you know, try to bounce it outside and get stopped for a negative loss. And Demo usually keeps you on script and they just kind of went away from that. So a lot of issues here, but it's kind of sad the way this is kind of unfolded with him specifically.
I was going to use the same word, Colton. I'll just say this. Good luck finding a complimentary running back if you do move on from him who is even nearly as good as David Montgomery. I mean, that's just a starting level talent, in my opinion, on a number of teams in this league. And it is sort of sad because when they acquired David Montgomery and over his first two seasons here, he represented everything the Lions want to be about on offense, that imposing smash mouth FU mentality with a bunch of talent. And, you know, I remember something he said to me last year after they We're coming off one of their blowout victories that he enjoys being here because it feels like the island of misfit toys. You know, he said, I was in Chicago, but I wasn't good enough for them there. But Detroit took a chance on me, and I want to do everything I can to ensure that they get the most out of that. And he referenced, you know, Jared Goff as a cast off on this island of misfit toys, and Alex Anzalone as a cast off from New Orleans, and a number of other guys, and, you know, even Saint as a fourth round pick. And it felt, ironically, sadly, this year that David was the misfit toy in this offense. And, you know, hopefully there's a path to mending that relationship, but I'm just not sure at this point that it exists.
Jeff, first of all, I need you to clip Colton comparing David Montgomery to DeAndre Swift before David Montgomery gets traded tomorrow.
I already then, texted Mustafa. He's
perfect. You're in charge of clips now. What are you talking about? and then I really quickly, Will, I don't want to diminish David Montgomery because I think he's excellent at what he does. I agree that he's a top 12, top 15 back in this league, just in a vacuum. But I also think in the role that he played this year, it is not a difficult position to replace.
Fair.
And I will point to Kyle Manungai. That is a, relatively speaking, not comparing him to me, but to the position, a unathletic back who averaged 4.6 yards per carry as a compliment. And so, you know, I think of all the positions on the field, running back might be one of the easiest ones to replace, especially a complimentary back.
And we're going to clip that when Kyle Manungai wins Super Bowl Done. MVP in 4 weeks.
Done. Just mash them together. Remix.
I'll tell you what, we'll take a break. I'll tell you about our friends over at Sleeper. When we get back, we got a super chat I want to read. We'll talk a little more Brad Holmes.
Super chat.
Stuff. So, we'll see you guys in a second. Here's a word from our sponsor.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
Sleeper, sponsoring Lions Collective. By the way, use the code HMA. You get a $100 deposit up to $100. And you guys know Sleeper Fantasy, of course, but you should be using Sleeper Picks. It's very simple. All you got to do is choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players. You can do it pregame live or across different sports. And the NFL playoffs are this weekend. So just go choose more or less than the predicted stats on any player from any game. Even across different sports, and on Sleeper, you can get up to 1,000x payouts. Share with your friends, get rewarded together. Shout out to Sleeper for sponsoring the show. Now we can get back to our friend Jason here, Williams, in the chat. Thank you for the $5. His thoughts on Mike Dissner interviewing with the Falcons. Sorry, late to the chat if this was talked about.
Yeah, no, I'll take this. At least I'll start with taking this one. I don't think it would be a massive blow on the football side of things. The Lions have seen Dissner's role evolve a lot since he's been here. He has transferred more to the business side of things over the last, let's call it, 2 or 3 seasons. And I think internally there's more of a view that he's a Rod Wood replacement down the line if he's not, you know, hired by another organization to be a president or a GM sooner. Initially, the Lions brought in Brandon Sosna, and he was kind of handling and fielding a lot of the salary cap contract negotiation stuff. Sosna left, and they brought in a guy named Charlie Adkins, who had worked with Dissner in Arizona, who I know Dissner thought very highly of when he added him. And so, like, they still have a really talented contract negotiator, a salary cap guy in the staff. Obviously, Dissner's a really good high-level backstop to all that stuff, but I don't think anything falls apart if Dissner gets another opportunity with another organization.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of this job in Atlanta because it's president of football, not football operations, president of football, and it seems...
kind of a sick title, though, huh?
Yeah.
If you read between the lines, it sounds like this role was created for Matt Ryan. So they obviously have to interview other candidates, but if you kind of read between the lines, a lot of the insiders make it seem like Matt Ryan is the front runner for this job. And you know, guys just have to get interviewed. So I don't want to completely like write it off because Dissner is well thought of around this league. The Lions certainly don't want to lose him. I know that because every time I've tried to request him for a story, they deny me, which means they're trying to hide him. But that being said, you know, I'm not certain what to make of that job. Like, it seems like Matt Ryan's a front runner. If they go a different direction, don't want to go with a former player who's never done this before, I think Dissner would be great for that job, but I'm just kind of skeptical of it right now.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a bit of a difficult time for the organization to lose Dissner. Obviously, he's played a crucial role in putting together a lot of these contract extensions for their own guys and finding ways to sort of manipulate the cap to make it work year by year. And fact is, there's a bunch more coming. I mean, that's one thing that Brad did acknowledge today. They've got priorities this offseason, and it sounds like trying to extend those guys from the 2023 class. So obviously Sam and Brian are up as second round picks, and he talked about Jameer and Jack too. So it's only going to get sort of more muddled here moving forward as far as trying to massage the cap and make it work on an annual basis. And Dissner would play a big role there, but I agree, Justin. I mean, they have guys in house who can certainly take that over for him if need be.
Now, I did want to get your guys' thoughts. We'll kind of go back to the Brad and Dan stuff, but you got the OC interviews. Did we get a chance to talk about David Blau? I don't think we have.
No.
Oh, perfect. Okay, so we have David, which, by the way, Colton, this man did tweet out some receipts. Okay, we were talking about David Blau, but David Blau has interviewed. They've done two that would you call them? I guess request to interview. I guess would be. I don't know if they interviewed David Blau already, but you have Mike McDaniel and David Blau so far that there at least has been reported interest in to at least go in an interview for this offensive coordinator job. I think many people would agree that Mike McDaniel kind of fits exactly what the Lions are probably looking for. I don't care if Mike McDaniel eats his own boogers. That dude can call plays. Okay. That dude, I don't give a damn what he is like, you know, maybe talking to the podium or, you know, addressing the media, but as a play caller, he's a very bright dude. I know Brad kind of spoke a little bit about the offense coordinator change, and he kind of weighed in as well on the defensive side. But what are your guys' thoughts on the two candidates they've interviewed so far and just kind of dissecting each of those guys? Because David Blau, technically, this would be another route of a guy who is bright, former quarterback of like 2 years ago. but he is on the inexperienced side as opposed to Daniel.
I don't know if they've interviewed either of them yet. It's just a matter of at least exploring the possibilities. And just to clarify for the audience, you no longer need permission to interview a position coach on another team. You certainly don't need permission to interview Mike McDaniel, who's out of a job currently. I think the only time they would need permission is if they're trying to talk to another OC. So if they wanted to talk to a Todd Monken, for example, he remains employed as an offensive coordinator in Baltimore. Blau feels premature. He very well may be very good at being a coordinator someday, in much in the same way I felt about Kellen Moore when he was here kind of coming up. He has that mind. And the connection that I really like bringing up is when I was digging into kind of Ben Johnson's background and all his inspirations, turns out they had the same college coordinator who was very inspirational in kind of their overall offensive philosophy. And that's John Shoup, who kind of was run out of college football for sponsoring NIL before that was a thing. So very, very funny. But, you know, the concept of make everything the same look different, everything different look the same is a John Shoup principle that both Ben Johnson and David Blau subscribe to. You know, I'm conflicted on Mike McDaniel. I am. I think he's obviously would be great for us in terms of interviews and podiums and all that stuff. He has managed some electric offenses, but I think there's something to be said for how soft the Dolphins were and certainly how soft they were when they came up here for joint practices. I question, you know, maybe some of the philosophical overlaps of toughness and gritty and running the football and how that will mesh with Dan Campbell, which I think is ultimately going to be a really big deciding point for what this coordinator situation you know, looks like.
I've got a few questions on, I guess, these two names. Now, I did bring up, I put a receipt, if you want to call it that, where I had David Blau on my list of OC candidates last year. And I think he was like the 11th out of 12 names on that list. So at that point, you're just kind of throwing darts. And if anything, it felt like, you know, he was on an OC track. And, you know, Dan Quinn, I think, has been telling people that he's going to be an OC in the next 5 years. The fact that he got an assistant quarterbacks coach really upon retirement, the fact that he was sort of a player coach his final years here in Detroit. He was in the NFL for a few years. It's not because of his arm talent, it's because of his mind. So it felt like once he got into coaching, he would sort of be fast-tracked there. So that's why I put him on last year, took over quarterbacks coach role when their, I think, Washington's quarterback coach took a head coach job somewhere else. So Blau kind of stepped into that role this year. And it does feel a little bit premature, but I think the idea of bringing him in now, if that's the way they want to go, which we don't know. This could just be as simple as, hey, what do you got? Let's hear some ideas. Like, it could be that simple. Maybe a courtesy to Blau, get his name out there a little bit. But if they do hire him, he is a young offensive mind, which a lot of people were mad they didn't go with last year when they hired John Morton. So you would have that box checked. He's really creative. He's brought a lot of play calls from whether it was his time in college at Purdue. The Lions have run a couple plays that have worked over the years. There's a play last year. I think the Commanders beat the Eagles late in the season. And that was a play that Blau drew up for Cliff Kingsbury for Jaden Daniels. Worked to perfection. They scored a touchdown. They beat the Eagles. So like, he's known for coming up with creative ideas and creative play calls. So if you bring in a guy like that, a young mind that has those ideas, and you let him learn from Dan as a coach, and maybe Dan continues to call plays in that role until Blau's ready, then you have a young offensive mind that teams aren't going to poach until he's, you know, ready to be a head coach. And they probably want some experience calling plays. And maybe that's a conversation for down the road. But I think you can keep Blau for a few years if you put him in that role. So maybe that's where Dan's mind is going a little bit. And then a guy like McDaniel, obviously one of the best play callers in football. He's really good at getting the most out of his players scheme-wise. Yeah, the softness stuff, that's, I think that falls more on the head coach. I wouldn't mind that as an OC. I think he's a guy that you probably write a blank check for. Now, the only question I would have here in Detroit is, how much does Dan want to meddle with this offense? Because if Dan wants this to look like his own offense and he has all these philosophies in place that he wants to keep, obviously McDaniel's going to have his own stuff that he wants to run. And so if Dan's okay with being more hands-off in that approach and let McDaniel take over in ways that he wants to, obviously it's a great fit, but I'm not so sure because Dan really likes his fingerprints all over this offense.
Yeah, hey, first of all, don't discount David Blau's arm now, Colton. He was slinging that thing on Thanksgiving back in 2019.
There you go. Fair enough. Fair enough.
He took a few shots downfield. No, I hear you guys. Mike McDaniel, to me, feels like a really natural fit because the offense that he was operating in Miami when it was kind of tearing up the league in 2022 and 2023 feels and looks a lot like the one he'd be stepping into here. Like, Tua, much like Goff, is a very precise, timing-oriented quarterback. Those receivers in Tyreek Hill and Devontae Jalen Waddle in some ways mirror what the Lions have here in St. Brown and J-Mo. And then Achan, maybe the only running back more explosive, faster in the league than Jahmyr Gibbs. And if it, you know, this is obviously going to be a Jahmyr Gibbs-led backfield moving forward, David Montgomery or not. This, it feels like McDaniel would be able to apply a lot of the same principles that helped them succeed there here. And, you know, that's one reason why I like the idea. To echo Justin, I just don't know if McDaniel is committed enough to the run to coach a Dan Campbell offense, which is supposed to be built around the run. And even when that Dolphins offense was, you know, third and second in the league in yards per play, it didn't run the ball all that much. I mean, it really was built around the passing attack. And I just went back and looked 2022 when they were third in the league in yards per play, 31st in rushing attempts that year. And the next year they were up to 15th. But I just don't know if he believes in the run like Dan Campbell does. Now, it certainly helps to have been the run game coordinator in San Fran for 4 years under maybe the most widely respected offensive mind of football in Kyle Shanahan. And that's a rushing attack in San Fran that is as diverse and layered as the one here. So that would bode well too. But I mean, I agree, Justin. I think Dan would have to be okay hiring a coach who might not view the game the same way he does. And honestly, maybe that's for the best. With David Blau, I think that this is a coach you hire now in a lesser role than OC. And maybe that's ultimately the Lions' intention here. Get him on staff in more of a specialized role, and then maybe he can work his way up if they hire someone like McDaniel, who might launch himself back into a head coaching job after a year here. But I push back on a lot of the people who point out that, like, well, Ben Johnson had never called plays before calling plays here in 2022. Ben Johnson spent 10 years coaching in the NFL before he became an offensive coordinator. His first job was in 2013 with the Dolphins, and he wasn't a coordinator until 2022. And, you know, I haven't gone through all the other successful young play calling OCs in the NFL, but I'd venture to guess they spent more than basically two seasons or a season and a half in the NFL before getting to that point. So I just think with the way this offense is set up and the way that Dan struggled to compartmentalize clock management and game management with calling plays, the Lions are best suited bringing someone in here who has called plays successfully in the NFL before.
Ben Johnson also got a start at Boston College, by the way.
Hey,
so, ah, he was ready to hit the ground running as a GA back then.
I think the interesting thing about Ben Johnson, right, is he coached a bunch of different positions too, right? Like tight end, wide receiver. Yeah. He had the passing game coordinator kind of audition before he got coordinator. So he had a lot of experience. But I can't believe I'm here making the case for David Blau. Didn't expect that when we came in. But I just want to dig in a little bit more to the Kellen Moore comp because I think it's an appropriate one. Kellen Moore played for the Cowboys for 3 years, retired, went immediately into quarterback coach. So he didn't have an assistant quarterback coach. I think Blau only was full-on quarterback coach for like the last month of the season. One season at quarterback coach, immediately into offensive coordinator, where they became the number one offense that first season and the number one scoring offense in his third season. And so I do think it's interesting because Blau was here for three seasons. He obviously departed, but when he departed, where did he go? He went to Minnesota, got a little experience around Kevin O'Connell, not a bad thing. And then he went to Arizona and he got a little experience under Cliff Kingsbury. So I think a lot of people hold up as a pretty sharp offensive mind, thinks a little bit differently than maybe anything Blau had seen before. And then he goes and he works for Cliff Kingsbury in Washington the last 2 years. And so I think there's a lot of interesting kind of schematic backgrounds he's built. But ultimately, if we talk about what this team needs, I had already been saying it. Brad Holmes said it two or three times in his very short answer about what this team was looking for in OC details. It's where Morton failed the most was being detail-oriented, having these guys on their P's and Q's. It was Ben Johnson's superpower. He told you to be 6 inches on your split, and you were 5 inches. You were getting your ass chewed out. There was no tolerance for being even a little off, and that was the big thing that slipped this year throughout the offense. The Lions are looking to get back to that standard, and so I can't speak to David Blau or Mike McDaniel or any of these other candidates' attention to detail at that level, but that is the guy they're looking for, is somebody that will be pristine on all the little things that show up on Sunday.
Now for our dog and by the way, shout out Dog and Pony Show,
hey,
to our good friend Kyle, but we're doing our pick of the week. This week it's going to be our OC. It sounds like Justin's maybe just pitching a little bit of that case for old David Blau, the young innovative.
That was well said.
Well said. No, I actually, you might have
hired him.
I hate
fresh
to say
formulated
it.
Opinion.
He kind of sold me a little bit. Now, I don't know. Now I'm a little more intrigued. I don't know. I'll ask you guys, at least at this point. I know they've only technically you got two names in the conversation, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the names they've spoke to. But just in general, is there anyone that interests you for your pick of the week for the OC, or it could be the two guys they plan on talking to?
I just talked a lot. Somebody else go.
Go ahead, Colton.
I mean, in terms of names we haven't discussed, which is, it's only been two so far, but maybe Todd Monken, if he's available. I wonder if he's going to – obviously he's been interviewing for head coaching jobs, I believe, or might have some interest there. And he could just follow John Harbaugh wherever he goes, since Harbaugh was apparently, you know, pounding the table for him to keep him on board. But I think that there's a lot of similarities between what the Ravens want to do in the run game and offensively versus the Lions. Obviously, it's stylistically different quarterbacks, but in terms of what Monken does in the run game, I think you can replicate a lot of that here. And, you know, I don't know what he's going to want or what he's looking for, but if he's an option, I would take a hard look at him. Trying to think who other, I guess Brian Daboll, we haven't mentioned him. There's the Campbell connection, obviously, and those guys go way back and they're really good buddies. But I do wonder, you know, some of the reports that came out of his tenure in New York made him seem like not the greatest guy. And I wonder if that's a culture fit. Maybe Dan doesn't care about that because he knows who he is from the past. And he might just go off that versus reports coming out of New York. But, and also you can say, was all of his success attributed to Josh Allen, or, you know, what's the story there? So some questions with that for sure, but I would consider him to be a name if he's available and wants to come here. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's still really early in the process.
Yeah. One name that kind of intrigues me that I'll just throw out there, not necessarily advocating for, is Mike LaFleur, who's the offensive coordinator with the Rams. Obviously not calling plays out there, but he's Sean McVay, but you appreciate anyone who has spent time underneath both McVay and Shanahan, where LaFleur was for, I think, 3 seasons as pass game coordinator and maybe receivers coach. And I know his first tenure calling plays as OC with the Jets didn't go well, and maybe the Lions should avoid hiring another failed OC from the Jets, given that that was exactly John Morton's background. But I think it's worth defending in LaFleur's case that he actually had some decent numbers with the Jets as OC when the quarterback wasn't who was the shitty like number two pick with the Jets, the quarterback.
Oh, Zach Wilson.
Yeah, when it wasn't Zach Wilson. I think to go back and look, like, they actually performed pretty well when, like, Mike White was under center and whoever the other backup was during LaFleur's time as OC. So I think that his resume is really intriguing. When you've been around that many bright offensive minds, surely you've got all kinds of interesting ideas. That Rams offense this year was, in my opinion, the best one the Lions saw. And obviously McVay gets most of the credit, but the way they could run the ball in a bunch of different ways stood out to me. And that's something that was a hallmark of the Lions run game when it was operating and humming. It was, they could hit you on basically any scheme and do it well. And obviously you got to have a good O-line to do that, but a little first to me is an intriguing name.
I'm going to first be dismissive of Brian Daboll's candidacy. And I
which
say
is totally
this,
cool, by the way, I just threw out his name.
By the way, no. I think you have a point, and maybe a concerning point, that the relationship with Dan Campbell is there and possibly enough, right? I'm a little concerned it's a little too John Morton-y. So Daboll before Buffalo, 4 years as a coordinator, 3 different spots, 3 bottom 3 scoring offenses. The 1 year he didn't have a bottom 3 scoring offense, 2011 in Miami, when he was interviewing Dan Campbell for a job, and it still wasn't very good. 20th in scoring. You know, Buffalo, first 2 years in Buffalo, 30th in scoring, 23rd in scoring. And then, I don't know, something happened and they started getting really good. And I can't figure out why Buffalo started getting really good. But if you want to pin this to him making Josh Allen into a better quarterback, and I'm not going to take anything away from him, maybe he was the elixir that made Josh Allen great. Josh Allen ain't here, and your quarterback is nothing like Josh Allen. So you can't run that offense. He goes to New York and he gets a quarterback that's kind of like Jared Goff in Daniel Jones.
Danny Jones got and wheels now, though.
Oh, yeah.
That's Vanilla Vic.
I understand. But like, either way, that shit fell off a cliff.
Yeah, it did.
And Brian Daboll's just a cantankerous personality. And we just saw an OC with a cantankerous personality. Like, none of that. Funny enough, the guy that I've been saying for a while is the guy that replaced Brian Daboll as the interim coach with the Giants and Mike Kafka. I kind of admire his background working for Andy Reid. I like the fact that he kind of provided a spark to those Giants despite, you know, a lack of wins. Commitment to the run, not afraid to take deep shots, obviously showed plenty of creativity here with passes to Jameis Winston and a few other things in that game. Like, Derek to Barnes, me, he checks a lot of box. He's done a lot of the stuff. As I was digging deep into this topic, though, like one guy I kind of stumbled upon that I didn't know anything about, but I'm like, I'm going to throw him on the list because he's interesting to me. Brian Fleury, run game coordinator for the 49ers. And for the same reason Will brought up LaFleur, you know, any connection to Mike Shanahan, I'm interested in. I think he is the game's brightest offensive mind, more so than Ben Johnson or Sean McVay. Like, I love what Shanahan does offensively. I love what he does with the run game consistently. Fleury has been with the 49ers forever, has slowly climbed up the ranks there. He started as their tight ends coach in 2022 and moved to run game coordinator this year. And I was just reading quotes on him, and George Kittle talked about just like how obsessive he was about the details. Oh, ding, ding. Hits that box that I was talking about. He's big on details of every single play, Kittle said. He absolutely knows everything going on at the offense. Former college quarterbacks, worked with multiple positions, interviewed for an OC job in New England last year. So it's not like he's not on anybody's radar. I mean, if you're talking way dark horse, like that's kind of a name that interests me outside of the ones that most of us are already mentioning.
Speaking of Kafka, the same way that Ben Johnson made his final audition in Chicago for the Bears head coaching job last year with the stumble bum, Kafka came to Detroit and made his audition for the Lions OC job with those trick plays. The one in the first half on like the 50-yard touchdown, the one to Winston in the second half, and then just looked across the field at Dan and was like, hire me.
Yeah.
I am here.
You know who while we're on the topic of intriguing names, you know who I'm starting to really, really like? And this is just, he might become a head coach, but I think and you talked about anyone on that Mike Shanahan tree. What about the Sean Payton tree? What about Davis Webb? All right, he's got a lot of intrigue around the league, and he probably will be a head coach. He's already interviewed for head coaching gigs, but he's currently the passing game coordinator with the Broncos. He's been coaching Bo Nix the last 2 years. He's been around offensive minds, played for Kingsbury in college. He's been around Sean Payton the last couple of years, and they love the dude. He's kind of the David Blau type, though, where he played. I think he just became a quarterback coach like 2 years ago, but at least he's at least involved in the passing game. So I think that gives him a little, he's just slightly in front of David Blau. Obviously there's not a relation to the Lions with the offense, so David Blau has that. But there's something about, if he does become head coach, he'll be the youngest head coach, I believe, since Sean McVay. He's 30 years old. So there's some intrigue there. He could, if he doesn't end up getting a head coaching gig, he could be an OC for one of the best OC positions, it's my opinion, despite the O-line, in the NFL, which could fast track and be a head coach. So Davis Webb, I really like. I think that dude's going to be a really good play caller and probably head coach very soon. So we'll see with that.
Put him on my list last year, put him on my list this year. I totally agree with you. The Sean Payton connection is the connection, right? This is Dan's heavily influenced by Sean Payton and his offense. So I think that makes perfect sense. I love the fact that he's doing John Morton's job in Denver this year as pass game coordinator. So replace John Morton with John Morton's replacement. It'll go great.
That's, you know what?
Campbell, just call Parcells. Just get Parcells in here. That's the root of the tree that spawned Sean Payton, that spawned all these other branches. Get Parcells back in.
Yeah. Why not? You know, at this point. Hey, good show today, fellas. I appreciate you guys. And by the way, everyone that's watching, for the super chats we got from what was the name on that one? Jason Williams. We appreciate you. Hit the like button on the stream before you leave. We appreciate you. We'll be back next week. So until then, you guys check out these guys around me's work. You can check out my work as well. All the links will be in the description. You follow us on X. But until next week, we appreciate you all. Go Lions.
Peace.